More Idaho Matters now from the studios of Boise State Public Radio News. I'm Gemma Gaudet. The campaign for a United States president is in its final push. In fact, the countdown is on as we are 61 days away from Election Day and voting for our nation's 47th president. So this Thursday, Dr. David Adler, president of the Alturas Institute, will be hosting another constitutional conversation 60 days till the election. Democracy and the rule of law hang in the balance. Dr. Adler is joining us now with a preview. Dr. Adler, always nice to have you on the program.
Thank you very much, Gemma. Always great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
So before we get into the meat of the campaign itself, Dr. Adler, I want to take a little bit of time to talk about a recent issue that came up in an interview that Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson had. She did an interview with CBS News, and she said she was agreeable to the idea of a, quote, binding code of ethics on the Supreme Court. That was a pretty interesting statement to be agreeable to, because this is something, Dr. Adler, that has been talked about quite a bit in regards to the Supreme Court justices having no code of ethics that they have to abide by. And on this program before, Dr. Adler, you and I have even talked about the fact that every single branch of the judiciary underneath the Supreme Court, and I'm talking all the way down to magistrate judges here in Idaho, have a stronger code of standards of ethics that they must abide by. So what do you take from Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson saying that she would be open to something like this?
Well, it was, as you say, Gemma, a remarkably candid statement by a sitting Supreme Court justice about an issue that is now roiled with controversy, as you indicated, I think stemming from the Supreme Court's recent decisions to overturn some precedents protecting Americans' fundamental rights. Certainly the Supreme Court's decision in the executive immunity case in July, and most of all, the deep-seated concern among Americans about the ethical lapses of at least two members on the Supreme Court. And so I think the sitting justice is being very candid, and I'm happy that she is, because as you say, all other judges are bound by ethical codes. And in fact, that in that CBS interview, Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson actually said, are Supreme Court justices any different? And I think the answer is no. The reality is the public is clamoring for some binding ethical rules so that we can bolster public confidence again in the court. As you know, the public confidence in the court has dropped to all-time lows, and this is very, very harmful to the rule of law and to the dispensation of justice in America. So I'm glad that she weighed in that way, and I frankly don't know why anybody else on the Supreme Court would not want a code of ethics that could demonstrate to all Americans that in fact these justices will adhere to the same kinds of ethical responsibilities that all other judges in America do.
Well, and in fact, Dr. Adler, there's almost a trickle-down effect when you talk about having low confidence in the courts, right? Yes, that's at an all-time high for the Supreme Court, but it trickles down to every part of the judiciary. And again, every other judge outside of the Supreme Court is held to a strict code of ethics. So,
yeah, well, that's exactly right, Gemma. And, you know, it occurs to me that back in 1936, a U.S. federal district judge named Halsted Ritter was actually impeached and removed from the court for taking gifts from wealthy residents who, even though they did not have cases in front of the judge, were nonetheless perceived as trying to influence the court. And so Congress removed that federal judge. And so when we think about the controversies that are outraging Americans now with Alito and Thomas, we wonder maybe the court should be the first to think seriously about its own reputation, which does have that trickle-down effect, as you rightly say. And we want Americans to respect courts. We want to believe that the rule of law will be equally applied and that judges won't show bias toward particular clients who might have interests that affect their judgment.
Mm-hmm. So Justice Jackson also made a remark during this same interview that she said she was troubled by the court's recent ruling in Trump versus the United States. And this was the ruling that gives the president absolute immunity from prosecution for acts that are undertaken when it's their official capacity. What should we think about that statement as well, Dr. Adler? And we should note that I know a lot of times when we talk about this particular case, people constantly talk about, well, it's giving, you know, former President Trump absolute immunity. It's giving every president absolute immunity. So people kind of maybe need to remember that, because it doesn't matter if you have a Democratic president in office, you have a Republican president in office. This doesn't say only former Trump, President Trump gets this type of immunity.
Well, I think it's so important that you provided that clarification. Going forward, all American presidents now are going to enjoy absolute immunity from criminal prosecution for official acts or for their core responsibilities. And what was remarkable in Justice Jackson's statement, again, very candid of her, was the fact that it troubled her because that's that one person in the country that enjoys this absolute immunity from criminal prosecution. And it's remarkable because, of course, it is in great, it does great violence to the very idea that no man is above the law, which has long been the fundamental pillar of the rule of law in our country. And it does, in fact, invite, I think, the consideration by future presidents of illegal activities, because they know they won't be held accountable. That's the great fear, of course. And so what I find really fascinating about Justice Jackson's candid opinion there is that she would talk about a case that's so fresh. Justices historically have been even a little reluctant to talk about cases that have just been handed down in the last 5 or 10 years previous to its decision. But this, I think, represents her great concern, and it's rightly held that our system has just been changed by this Supreme Court decision in Trump versus United States on July 1. Mm-hmm. It's certainly very troubling to me, because I find no foundation in our constitutional architecture for this sort of immunity for a president. Certainly nothing in the text, nothing in the discussions and debates in the Constitutional Convention. And we've never had a reason in our history, perhaps with the exception of Richard Nixon until Donald Trump, to worry that this was going to be a particular concern. And now mm-hmm. the Supreme Court's ruling provides a pathway for presidential commission of crimes and abuses of power for which they will not be held accountable. And that very much defeats the very fundamental principles of American constitutionalism.
Dr. Adler, before we go into break, I want to talk about one more issue. And this is that former President Trump, I believe there was an interview that aired on Fox News a Sunday where he basically admitted to interfering in the 2020 election. In fact, I want to read a quote that he said during this interview. This is a quote from former President Trump, quote, "Whoever heard you get indicted for interfering with the presidential election where you have every right to do it? You get indicted and your poll numbers go up. When people get indicted, your poll numbers go down. But it was such nonsense," unquote. What are your thoughts on this, especially in regards to what we just discussed with this immunity? Because he was president, he admitted that he interfered, but doesn't understand as to why one would be indicted for something like that.
Well, Gemma, that was an amazing statement, one that you'd never think that any president would admit to, let alone a criminal defendant in a pending trial where he's been charged with election interference in violation of the federal laws and the United States Constitution. I think what is so revealing about that is that it provides us yet another key insight into his mindset about laws, the inapplicability of laws and restraints to himself, that he in fact believes that the laws are for everybody else, just not Donald Trump. And I think that also provides insight into his understanding of the Supreme Court's decision in the presidential immunity case, that he has now been given a free pass, a get-out-of-jail card by the Supreme Court. It's also alarming because he assumes, remarkably, that he had a right to interfere in the election. Let's pause and think about that for a second. The claim that he had a right to interfere in the election, the charges against him, everybody recalls, is conspiracy to defraud the United States, conspiracy to obstruct an official proceeding, and of course, the conspiracy against the rights of Americans. What that is the fundamental right of Americans to choose their president. And his actions, alleged actions at least, would undercut or deny all of the history that was so important in providing Americans with the fundamental right to choose their representatives. He's saying that he has a right to interfere and to engage in the actions for which he's charged. So you can bet that Jack Smith, the special counsel, now has additional evidence to bring before Judge Chutkan as this case gets rolling in her federal district court.
Dr. Adler, the vice president and the Democratic candidate for the presidency, Kamala Harris, had her first extensive interview since the convention. She did this interview with Dana Bash with CNN. What are your takeaways from that interview that aired last week?
You know, I think she did a fine job of introducing herself or reintroducing herself to America, this time as a presidential candidate. Of course, it's no surprise to viewers that she had the need, had the responsibility to set forth some of her most important positions on key issues of concern to voters. And she had to deal with a couple of issues where she's on which she's changed her position over the past 5 years, going back to 2019 when she was then running in the Democratic primary to win the nomination. And one of those was, of course, fracking, which is an important issue to lots of people in Pennsylvania. But I thought she handled the question very well. That is, the question about has she flip-flopped, essentially? And she spoke in a very learned way, saying she's not changed her values, her commitment to green energy and protection for the climate. She just understands that the means to the ends can still be accomplished in various ways. And that, I think, Gemma, is a function of learning. We all hope that we can feel free to change our specific views on particular issues if we learn more, if we understand issues a little bit better. Of course, her critics will say that she has changed her mind for politics, but I think the important thing is she exuded authenticity and sincerity in that interview, and that's so important for her in this campaign because she's really making character a major issue, her character against the character of Donald Trump. And that's pivotal, I think, as we go forward, Gemma, because there are so few undecided voters in this mm-hmm. election. And many people are going to be basing a judgment on the character of the two candidates.
Well, and I would know, Dr. Adler, that it was a solid interview. I don't think it moved the needle one way or the other in regards to polling. With that said, according to polling, this race is neck and neck, and people need to be aware of that. And we are really looking at these swing states. There are seven of them that will make a difference truly in the outcome of this presidential election. Now, there are also a lot of commentators that believe that this upcoming debate, which is set for September 10th, so right around the corner, less than a week away, could have a huge influence on independent voters. And as you said, Dr. Adler, A lot of independent voters out there, a lot of undecided voters out there. So how would you assess this upcoming debate, which we don't know what it's going to end up being or looking like because it hasn't happened, but assess the status of the election as well?
Well, I think you're right. I think this is a very important debate, and in all likelihood, it's going to be the only debate we have. And so this will be the first time that American voters have an opportunity to see the two candidates side by side. That's never happened before. And of course, then it's likely to be the last time. So what is said during this debate might be memorable. It might prove to be a tipping point because the independent voters, some 12 to 15% of the undecided independent voters in those swing states, might use this as an opportunity to bring their measuring stick to the campaign and decide whom they're going to support. So you have to think that these independent voters have, you know, several issues that are important to them, but there's also the centrality of the character issue. And what we know from polls is that a lot of the Republicans who could not bring themselves to support Trump, the Nikki Haley followers, let us say, could also not support Biden. But the polls indicate that they are warming to the idea of supporting Kamala Harris because the age factor, which was dragging down Biden, among other things, is no longer present. And they didn't like Trump to begin with. So what will likely transpire in this debate, at least on the part of Kamala Harris, is the all-out effort to demonstrate that she is presidential, knowledgeable, can demonstrate leadership skills, and most of all, that she will be very different in terms of behavior on the stage than Donald Trump is likely to be. You rightly said, who knows what's going to happen? That could be a roller coaster of a debate for all we know. A lot depends on whether Donald Trump is going to try to talk over Kamala Harris. And even though at this juncture, the rules indicate that microphones will be turned off when a candidate is not speaking, we may well hear the voice of Donald Trump in the background while Kamala Harris is speaking. So I think people will be attempting to gauge the behavior of the two candidates, aside from their two or three or four issues of great importance to them. They may well want to draw a bead on who appears to be more presidential, more disciplined, more restrained, and thus more capable of representing the kind of America that they want to see reflected in a president.
Dr. Adler, the former president, Donald Trump, is set to be sentenced September 18th in the hush money case in New York. What do you expect that sentence to look like? And do you think it'll have any impact at all on the presidential election? And I ask that because every time there has been an indictment against the president, and this is, you know, a sentencing, so we're far, far away from an indictment, his numbers go up. So again, we don't know what will happen in regards to this sentencing.
Well, we don't. And you're right. It's a rich irony that every time an indictment comes down, his numbers go up. I think that reflects the steadfast support that his base demonstrates in favor of Trump. But I don't think that will play well with, again, the small percentage of independents yet to make their decision. You know, a reality emerges once a sentence comes down. If the judge says, for example, that Donald Trump is going to be sentenced to jail time in addition to a fine, then that will resonate on the campaign and it will undermine Donald Trump's attempt to distinguish himself from the legal proceedings because, in fact, he wants to say that every decision, every ruling in the court represents judicial interference. He'll say that again. But the idea of a sentence coming down could, in fact, help to persuade those fence sitters to ask themselves, do we really want a convicted felon in the White House? Do we really want someone who is not interested in abiding by the very rules that we all must abide by? I think that is going to be more important than the length of the sentence, than more important than the terms of the sentence. Just the fact of it, I think, will be more important, and everybody will remember, oh, this is the hush money case. This represented his involvement with a porn star. And do we really want that person in the White House? I think those are the kinds of factors that will weigh in the thinking of the independent voters.
Well, as always, Dr. Adler, appreciate you taking time to speak with us. We've been talking with president of the Altruis Institute, Dr. David Adler. He will have his next constitutional conversation 60 days till the election. Democracy and the rule of law hang in the balance. It will be tomorrow, Thursday, beginning at 4:30 at the Yonkey Center in Boise. We will, of course, put information on our website. It is free and open to the public to attend the presentation as well as the question and answer period after. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
The candidates for November are set.
I know Donald Trump's tight.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.